This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 7th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 5th annual KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival begins its season May 17th at 7 p.m. at the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists will perform string quartets by Jean Estera, Barber, and Dvorak. This concert is free but requires online registration due to limited seating. Registration and more information are available at KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Jacqueline Froelich spends a day on a controversial hog farm near Mount Judy. She toured the facility yesterday. Plus, memories of an Arkansas that has almost vanished. Meredith Martin-Motes lets us listen in on a conversation about life in the Ouachitas nearly 80 years ago.
First, Arkansas Auditor of State Charlie Daniels says he won't run for re-election in 2014. Daniels is 73 and has served as a state constitutional officer for nearly 30 years. He was first elected land commissioner in 1984, secretary of state in 2002, and has served as auditor since 2010. He could run for one more four-year term, but says he wants to spend more time with family.
I've decided I'm 73 years old. I'd like to spend time with my kids and my grandkids and travel some. My daughter lives in Colorado, and I think that I've, you know, served the state of Arkansas well in these constitutional offices as well as two governors in the cabinet.
Daniels has served in public office for nearly 40 years. He's from El Dorado.
Last month's rain showers caused several hundred thousand dollars worth of damage to county roads in parts of Benton County. Robert McGowan, the director of Benton County Emergency Management, says the agency, along with the County Road Department and Arkansas Department of Emergency Management, has completed an assessment of the damage done during the April showers.
The unincorporated areas of Benton County, we found 126 sites that were in need of repair, and based on the preliminary assessments, we believe that will cost over $700,000 to make all those repairs.
He says the damage was widespread throughout the unincorporated parts of the county, and as a result, the necessary repairs will be varied in nature.
We have low water slabs that have to be replaced. I believe there's about 10 low water slabs that have to be taken out and replaced. We have CMPs, which is corrugated metal pipes, which help the water flow under the road. There was such a high velocity of water flow, they washed those out. Some of them were damaged. They have to be replaced. In other areas, the road was just basically washed away, and they're having to haul in dirt to build it back to what the pre-disaster condition is.
McGowan says the county has 9 months to complete the work. After that, county officials will have 3 months to submit paperwork to the state for a 35% reimbursement of the actual cost of the repairs.
Tonight, the Fayetteville City Council will consider a grant application for an e-waste voucher program. Brian Pugh, the city's waste reduction coordinator, says if the city, Boston Mountain Solid Waste District, and Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality all approve the grant, it will be the second year for the program in Fayetteville.
Last year, we got a grant for e-waste in which we were able to print up coupons, and it's a redemption program. So we have these coupons we can give to Fayetteville residents. They can take the coupons when they have a old TV or an old computer or other type of electronic equipment, and they can take it down to the Washington County Household Hazardous Waste Facility.
Pugh says the county invoices the city for all coupons redeemed at the facility, and then the state grant would reimburse the county for the usual $5 disposal fee.
Early voting begins today in Sebastian County for renewal of the county's 1% sales tax. Votes may be cast at either courthouse in Fort Smith or Greenwood starting at 7:30 in the morning each early voting day. Early voting will continue throughout the week, and while the offices will not be open Saturday, early voting will also be available Monday, with the special election taking place 1 week from today.
The U.S. Senate yesterday passed the Marketplace Fairness Act, a bill that, if enacted by the House, would require all online retailers to collect local and state sales taxes on purchases shipped anywhere in the country. Following the Senate vote, Arkansas's 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack of Rogers, who has long been a proponent of the bill, issued a statement saying that the, quote, bipartisan Senate vote to pass the Marketplace Fairness Act has given even more momentum to close this tax loophole once and for all, end quote. The bill now moves to the House for debate.
Six Arkansas companies have made the most recent Fortune 500 list. Topping the list, Bentonville-based Walmart, with reported revenues of just more than $469 billion. Other Arkansas businesses included on the list, Tyson Foods of Springdale at 93 on the list with $33 billion in revenue. El Dorado-based Murphy Oil, listed as number 104 with nearly $29 billion in revenue. Little Rock-based Dillard's reported $6.8 billion in revenue, putting it at 378 on the list. And Lowell-based J.B. Hunt Transport ranked 486th with just more than $5 billion in revenue. Also making the list was Little Rock-based telecom company Windstream, ranking 414th with $6.2 billion in revenue. Previously ranked 544th, this is the first time Windstream has been ranked in the Fortune's top 500.
The state's largest non-government food aid charity has a new CEO. Rhonda Sanders has been named head of the Arkansas Food Bank. She previously served as executive director of the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance and says she's pleased to take her new position.
Really fell in love with the food banking industry, the mixture of charitable organizations, helping people get their lives on track and to get the food that they need while also operating in a business environment. Liked the hands-on, like all the things that the food banks were doing to help families, and thought it would be a great fit for me when this opportunity came open.
Sanders says the Arkansas Food Bank's goal is to distribute 18 million pounds of food this year. She replaces Phyllis Haynes, who is retiring.
Last night, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals continued play at Arvest Ballpark against the Arkansas Travelers. Nats won 6-1, making it the second win of the series for the Naturals. They're now 11-18 this year. In other baseball news, Saturday's Razorback baseball game against Tennessee will be televised on Cox Sports Television and Cox Sports HD. Saturday's game will join Sunday's game in being televised after a pair of earlier Razorback telecasts were canceled because of weather. The three-game series will begin with an untelevised game Friday night at Baum Stadium. The weekend series will be the last string of home games for the Hogs during the regular season.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for partly cloudy conditions with lows from 52 in northwest Arkansas to 56 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs from 78 in northwest Arkansas to 83 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows from 57 in northwest Arkansas to 61 in the Arkansas River Valley.
You didn't say the word snow.
I did not.
This is Ozarks at Large. Opposition continues to grow against a newly permitted industrial swine breeding farm now in operation on the Buffalo National River watershed in Newton County. Protesters are planning to converge on Jasper Wednesday to attend two scheduled gatherings. The hog farmers have remained mostly silent on the matter, but yesterday, for the first time, members of the press were invited to tour the facility. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich among them.
Campbell and Henson Hog Farms, CNH Hog Farms for short, situated along a rugged mountain bench about 20 miles southeast of downtown Jasper. From the outside, the new double barn CAFO, or confined feeding animal operation, looks ordinary, but inside, a seed population of 824 large pink sows is starting to swell. Half of the hogs ramble about in a maze of spacious corrals and groups of eight. The other half are pregnant, confined to narrow gestation pens. They're mostly quiet, laying on their sides, listening to the ruckus. No one can simply walk into these swine barns. Several dozen print, television, and radio reporters had to, like the farmers do every day, shower in and shower out to remove any biohazards and don protective clothing. Preventing contamination from entering the climate-controlled facility is critical since these sows, boars, and soon-to-be piglets are antibiotic-free. Our first stop is a currently empty farrow-to-wean barn where crated nursing sows will suckle their piglets. This is Jason Henson.
And the reason that she cannot is if she can turn around, she will may lay on her pigs or may actually kill her pigs. I mean, it's all to protect the baby pigs at this point.
Jason Henson and his family, along with the Campbell family, co-own the farm, permitted to house up to 2,500 sows and 4,000 piglets. They put up personal assets as well as secured a multi-million dollar loan guaranteed by USDA Arkansas Farm Service Administration, which conducted an environmental assessment, finding no significant impact. This operation is all about raising piglets, which are weaned after 20 days and shipped out to be raised to other farms to eventually become your bacon and pork chops. International meat packer Cargill is CNH Farms integrator, as such providing breeding stock and feed. The sows are kept perpetually pregnant, artificially inseminated, gestation lasting about 4 months. And as they nurse their piglets, they enjoy a very rich diet.
You have to keep yourself comfortable, for she will eat and produce milk. But then you can't get it too cool, for the babies can't live if it's too cold. So there's a fine line there, and that's where the heat lamps come in place. You can keep the sow comfortable and yet keep the babies comfortable also with the heat lamps.
The Hensons have farmed Newton County for 8 generations here on the Buffalo River watershed. And because of the river, Jason Henson said, they've cultivated a strong environmental ethic. They broke ground on the swine farm just 3 months ago after all permits and their loan were in order. Wastewater from the swine barns drains into 2 newly constructed sewage lagoons lined with almost 2 feet of clay. One is a settling pond, the other a secondary water catchment, 3.6 million gallon capacity for both. Water from the second pond is recycled back up into the swine house as wash water. The farm is required to have 180-day sewage lagoon storage, Jason Henson said, but they have 280-day capacity just in case. Honey trucks suck swine effluent from the first pond to spread on 640 acres of permitted pasture, according to a strict schedule, only during dry conditions to keep nutrients like phosphorus from sliming waterways.
Our nutrient management plan was actually based on phosphorus level index. Years ago, I believe it was based on nitrogen, but ours is based on phosphorus index. That's how they know how much, they tell us how much we can actually apply. We do soil samples and we have to test our organic manure to see how much this nutrient factor has got in it, and therefore we'll know exactly how much we can apply.
Still, opponents worry pollution from the farm will wash into nearby Big Creek, a major tributary to the lower section of the Buffalo National River, and wreck it. But Steve Eddington, spokesperson for Arkansas Farm Bureau, believes this CAFO, the first like it in Arkansas, will become an agricultural model.
A lot of the argument, the rhetoric you hear, is built on the supposition that an accident will occur. It's not when, but that it will. And I think when you talk to Jason, you see the environmental safeguards that are in place here. The first thing you come away with is this is designed for something not to happen.
Time will tell. The Buffalo National River Park Service, which has gone on record in opposition to the farm, operates a monitoring station near the confluence of Big Creek and the Buffalo River. In Arkansas, USGS is looking for funding to monitor as well upstream along Big Creek. And newly organized opposition, the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, has collected nearly 11,000 signatures from concerned citizens. A coalition of groups have just sent notice of intent to sue to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, claiming Arkansas Farm Service Agency's loan guarantee and environmental assessment for CNH Farms may be in violation of the Endangered Species Act, affecting aquatic life and 2 endangered bats living downstream. One of the pastures where swine waste will be spread is close to Mount Judy School District. But CNH Farms co-owner Philip Campbell says no worries. Manure has been spread on these fields for years by all kinds of farmers, and residents are used to it. Still, he and Jason figured once word got out about the hog farm, they might get some flack.
Some, but not to this magnitude. They've got concerns. They're real concerns.
Philip Campbell insists farmers share those concerns. His family, who also traced their roots back 8 generations, have raised hogs for the past 12 years, so know what they're doing, he said. Plus, the new CAFO is providing much-needed jobs.
8 jobs somewhere else might not mean too much to other counties, but it means quite a bit to us. And to be able to farm at home, you know, I mean, be able to farm here at our where we live.
Opponents claim nepotism was at play regarding the USDA-backed Arkansas Farm Service Agency loan. The agent who conducted the environmental assessment is husband to a distant Campbell cousin, but Philip Campbell denies any conflict of interest.
So, I mean, and it took 2 years to get this permit and loan. I mean, it wasn't like we went to Walmart's and got this permit or got this loan. You know, it took 2 years.
Farmer Carl Smith ran Mount Judy Feed Store for 33 years. He's retired. He used to raise piglets, a small 30-sow operation. He says this new CAFO fits right into the local economy.
Because they're hauling chicken manure, turkey manure in this valley all over. They even put some on the Buffalo River, right on the riverbanks of the Buffalo River down here. And it's okay because all of this here is organic.
Warren Campbell, a relative of Philip Campbell, is a Newton County Quorum Court judge. He says the farm will bring much-needed tax revenue to county coffers.
I think it's around $40,000 a year, what it's going to bring, between $40,000 to $50,000.
He said the farm's received lots of visitors.
And people from outside the county come to see it.
A lot of support.
I think more support than not support.
Evidence, these farmers say, that a majority stand in favor of CNH hog farms. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We've posted a slideshow of CNH hog farms on the Ozarks at Large homepage. That's ozarksatlarge.com. The Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, which opposes factory farming, is hosting a public meeting Wednesday, tomorrow afternoon at 4 at the Buffalo Theater on the Jaspertown Square. And tomorrow night at 6, the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality will hold an informational meeting on the permitting of CNH hog farms. That takes place in the Carroll Electric Cooperative Building at 511 East Court Street. That's also in Jasper. And in just a moment on Ozarks, a law passed by the 89th General Assembly this year that would allow cities and counties in Arkansas to set up energy improvement districts. Roby Brock has the details just ahead.
But first, a couple of places we'd like to recognize, or groups, I suppose. 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville was named to Travel and Leisure Magazine's 2013 It List of Best New Hotels. Selected by Travel and Leisure editors, the 2013 It List features 61 groundbreaking hotel openings that are transforming their destinations. 21C Bentonville is included in the design category. The 2013 It List will be featured on travelandleisure.com and in the June issue of Travel and Leisure magazine.
Fayetteville High School's Connotation, which has won some national awards, will hold a release party for their 30th volume of Connotations. That's tomorrow in the Walker Room of the Fayetteville Public Library from 5:30 until 7:30 in the evening. Editions of the latest magazine will be available for purchase, refreshments available, and there will be some readings from the latest volume by the writers.
Also announced recently, 3 popular operas, including 2 comedies and a tragedy, plus a group of extraordinary singers and artistic staff, will bring magic on the mountain at Inspiration Point as Opera in the Ozarks presents its 63rd season, beginning on Friday, June 21st, and running through July 19th. This year's repertoire features audience favorites Madama Butterfly by Puccini, The Elixir of Love by
Donizetti,
and Gilbert and Sullivan's The Pirates of Penzance. The 4-week season includes 26 performances highlighting the exceptional voices of some of tomorrow's operatic stars, supported by a gifted orchestra.
I use Opera of the Ozarks to measure summer. To me,
yeah,
and officially this year, since it's on the 21st, that's when summer starts. And then when it's over, it's like, oh, all those things I wanted to do this summer, I better get going.
Yeah.
The Ozarks is
I was just looking at that, and I was like, I need to start writing things down in my calendar for summer.
Opera in the Ozarks, kind of opera boot camp is what takes place.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's really great.
On the next Living on Earth, sampling the fruits and the story of an urban garden.
We're getting fruit, tons of leaves. We're weeding and feeding things to our chickens. We're doing all these things, and there's an explosion of life.
Growing a perennial oasis in a desolate urban lot. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Living on Earth, Sunday evening at 5 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks Large. Earlier this year, the Arkansas legislature passed a law designed to ignite projects that would, in theory, save energy costs for homeowners in Arkansas. This week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked with Ken Smith, the policy director for the Arkansas Advanced Energy Association, about the bill that became law this winter.
It's a bill known as the Property Assessed Clean Energy Act, or PACE for short. In essence, the law allows a government entity, such as a city council or a group of cities or counties, to establish energy improvement districts, which would allow for no interest or low interest loans for acquiring or installing energy efficiency improvements in neighborhood buildings, homes, or across regional areas. Ken Smith, policy director for the Arkansas Advanced Energy Association, explains.
Yeah, I think the PACE bill is probably one of the most outstanding pieces of legislation passed this session. It allows counties, local government, and even the state to form energy improvement districts that in turn those districts can issue general revenue bonds that can fund energy efficiency improvements to commercial and residential buildings, water improvement projects such as point source hot water heaters, and renewable energy projects such as solar panels or ground-based heat pump systems. It can do all of that, and the great thing about for a ratepayer or a commercial landowner or a residential landowner is that they're able to do this, borrow the money with no upfront costs, and pay it out over a long period of time.
They'd make those payments through their property tax bills, which would have a line item explaining the assessment. Only the property owners voluntarily taking advantage of the energy improvements would be required to pay. For example, say Fayetteville wanted to create a PACE district to allow homeowners or commercial building owners to finance solar panels on rooftops or install geothermal HVAC system upgrades. Instead of paying out of pocket, those energy savings projects could be financed by bonds, and building owners who participated would pay back the bonds through an assessment on their annual property tax bills over a period of, say, 10 or 15 years. The goal is cost savings for end users, and projects that would never have been able to be financed by individuals can pool the power of government-backed bonds to make them happen. Smith says, in the end, cities and counties will hopefully lead these laboratories of renewable energy experimentation.
I know some local governmental officials, such as the city of Fayetteville, that's really interested in this program, and hopefully Washington County. We've heard that a White County judge is very interested in this. We've heard that Jonesboro and the county of Craighead might well be as well interested in this. And so I think we'll see some leadership from counties and cities such as that, including probably Pulaski County and the cities of North Little Rock and Little Rock. And so that's where it's going to start, these local counties and cities that have been kind of leaders in the state on a lot of the energy and environmental issues. They'll start working with this legislation, work out all the bugs, and then we'll have good role models and examples that we'll be able to share with the rest of with other jurisdictions in the state of Arkansas.
Ken Smith, the policy director for the Arkansas Advanced Energy Association, talked to Roby Brock this week. You can hear more from their conversation at talkbusiness.net. Support for environmental reporting from Talk Business Arkansas is provided by the Keep Arkansas Beautiful Commission. Tuesday, May 7th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. Joining me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Jason Aldean?
Yes, country music star.
Excited about him?
Sounds good. I have plans tonight, but...
Well, he's going to be at a couple of regional venues.
Oh, okay, so I have time to get there.
You do.
Okay.
He will be at the BOK Center in Tulsa on Friday. Mm-hmm. And at the Verizon Arena in North Little Rock on Saturday.
Okay.
And you can find out more at jasonaldean.com. Also in concert, in our little Arts Away segment today,
yes,
the Beach Boys are at River Spirit Casino in Tulsa May 17th and 18th.
Well, that's right. They're touring again.
Styx is at Verizon Amphitheater in St. Louis on May 18th.
Uh-huh.
Tim McGraw, I think he's country.
He is country.
We'll be at the Verizon Amphitheater in St. Louis on May 23rd. Soundgarden is at the Midland in Kansas City on May 22nd. Drive-By Truckers at the Crossroads in Kansas City on May 25th. Cheap Trick at the Voodoo Lounge in Kansas City on May 25th. And Paul McCartney at the FedEx Forum in Memphis. That might be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Why is that?
Well, he's not exactly young anymore.
Okay.
And neither are lots of his fans, including me. So, you know, check it out, May 26th in Memphis.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
If you've lived in Arkansas for at least a few years, you know the state has seen some changes. Imagine spending nearly a century in the natural state. Bud Rector, who lives in Yell County, will turn 99 later this year. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Meredith Martin Moat sat in on a conversation Bud had with another lifelong Yell County resident, and she shares with us voices that have experiences from another Arkansas.
Bud Rector lives on Harkey Valley Road outside of Dardanelle in Yell County. I recently went with my father, J.L. Martin, to visit Mr. Rector and record some of his stories about life in the Timberwoods and the nearby Sulphur Springs that once flowed through the region. Although a generation younger, my father spent much of his younger years working in the same logging woods. Together, they touched on stories surrounding Dizzy and Paul Dean, who spent their younger days in the area, and recalled their younger brother, a man they called Poodle, playing in the rural leagues alongside Bud and many of my father's family, including my great uncle Grover, a traveling preacher with an inconsistent pitch. This is part one of their edited conversation.
I was born up, I guess where Hidden Harkey used to live. Up there, you know, by the old schoolhouse up on the hill, right in there, up in Harkins Valley, about 6 miles up there from Shaquilla, December the 6th, 1914. Everybody was going around the chopping axe and cross-cut saws, running to jail, cutting and skinning logs. And me and my brother, we was a hauling logs and lumber with a truck trailer back in the early in, when I was about 25, 30 year old, well, we went to the woods hauling logs and lumber and stayed with it for a while. Moved back up in the valley up there, well, that's all they had to do up there. And there wasn't nothing else to do, was it?
Nope.
Moved down here and I began hauling then for out around in the county up at Blue Ball and up Dutch Creek out of Danville, Havana, Plainview, Rover, all over there. Hauled logs of lumber all over for the Burnett and Weiss Lumber Company and Mountain Buckman. And up until men normally got married in 1948, Halloween night, 1948 then I hauled a couple of years after we got married, then I quit. Built me a brawler house, had a few cattle, baled hay, and just anything to make a dollar. And there wasn't very many dollars to be made.
You ask about the Forest Service. Did that come in the 30s when they bought that land up there?
Yeah, it's 36. They bought all that land, you
36.
See.
And built.
Spring Lake out there.
I know that the line was, Daddy lived in a house up there past Laverne Kale Lane. And the house, one part of the house was in the district, one part wasn't. And that's the only way he got to work, because he was in that district up there somewhere.
Yeah, the Bonaparte Rutledge place.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Mr. Bonaparte Rutledge used to live there, you know. Yeah, Bonaparte Rutledge. Yeah, they had four stores down there. That was pretty good
prosperous place there for a while.
Had a hotel there at one time.
Yeah, and it burnt, yeah.
See, there was 7 springs there. All of them were sulfur. Some of them, boy, it had a very strong smell to it, too.
Oh, bad, yeah. I'm surprised the government never did do that, you know, make a park or something there.
And they used to work till like 10, 11 o'clock or whatever it was or something on Saturday, and then they'd go play ball Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
They'd be play or do whatever they were doing up to 10, 11 o'clock.
And we played Skeela Mountain, Sprague Creek over close to Belleville.
Slow Fork.
Ard, Pesgin, and Slow Fork.
They had a league, didn't they, Bud?
Yeah, they had a league of 10
teams or something.
Teams, there you see. Oh, Roger Harkey, he went to St. Louis tryouts, you know, for the leagues or whatever. Dizzy and Paul were a pitching.
Yeah.
This popper, you know. Roger got up there, he said, boy. He said, about all you can see, just hear that ball pass when Dizzy Dean and turn it loose.
They didn't play much around here. They were around here when they were younger, I think, and I think Ralph Dennis taught them in school. Is that correct?
Yeah. They said they moved from down east someplace and was moving up on Skeela Mountain, and Paul got lost, you know, somewhere down there. He told him he's Dizzy and Paul Dean brother. And they didn't believe him. He's like me about having look, he wasn't crazy, but I remember one time we was playing ball up there and he's playing first base, you know, and he's over there at that grove where you couldn't tell whether he's gonna throw the ball that way, or straight up when he'd wind up. He just go everything. And old Poodle over there, you know, fool around like that, wasn't paying attention. The runner on first, Grover wound up, could slam over to first, you know, and Poodle wasn't looking the ball anybody right for it. From then on, he could watch.
This has been part one in a 2-part series of an edited conversation between Bud Rector and J.L. Martin, recorded in Yell County, Arkansas, in partnership with the McRoy House Organization for Folklife, Oral History, and Community Action. This interview will be donated to the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Meredith Martin-Motes.
We'll hear more from Bud Rector in Meredith's second part of her visit with him on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. You can read more from Meredith at her blog, theboileddownjuice.com.
And ahead on Ozarks at Large, something very much from the 21st century, Antoinette explains the musician Macklemore in a Tuesday music review. That's coming up.
The Arkansas Razorback softball team is the 6th seed in the upcoming SEC tournament in Lexington, Kentucky. Arkansas will be in the SEC tournament for the first time since 2010, and the number 6 seed is the highest for the program since 2002. Arkansas has won 4 straight games and 8 of their last 9. The team is ranked 22nd in the country. Arkansas opens the tournament play against Missouri Thursday evening at 3 and it will be shown live on ESPNU.
And the University of Arkansas men's golf team, ranked 13th in the country, was named the number 2 seed at the 2013 NCAA Fayetteville Regional last night on a selection show at NCAA.com. That regional will be in Fayetteville at the Blessings Golf Club May 16th, 17th and 18th. 14 5-man teams and 5 individuals will take part in that. The NCAA Fayetteville Regional is the first time the Razorback men have hosted an NCAA golf event. It's the 6th consecutive year the men's golf program has advanced to the NCAA tournament, and Arkansas will need to finish among the top 5 teams at the regional to then move on to the NCAA championship later in the spring.
The 65th River Valley Invitational, hosted by the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum, is issuing a call for works. The deadline is June 7th, and this year's theme is Naturally Diverse Arkansas. The exhibition will focus on the natural beauty of Arkansas. Subject matter could include, but is not limited to, native plants of Arkansas and their habitats, rare plants and animals, state parks, rivers, outdoor sporting activities, and simple pleasures of everyday living in the natural state. Submissions can be any media: painting, photography, sculpture, installations, and new media. The purpose of this exhibition is to encourage and recognize professional artists. In addition, this exhibition aligns with the museum's mission to foster art appreciation in the community. Cash prizes will be granted to first, second, and third place winners. This exhibition is a museum fundraiser. All works will be for sale, and 50% of sale price will contribute to RAM's annual fund that supports exhibitions, programs, and events. More information is available at fsram.org.
And speaking of fundraisers, the band Big Bad Gina, who we have had in the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
We have.
Yes. They are preparing to release their new CD later this year, in the summer, I believe. They've launched a Kickstarter project to aid in that endeavor. The CD in progress is officially now titled Shine Your Light. And the rewards, if you haven't been to Kickstarter, depending on how much you pledge to support
a
project.
Your reward tier. You get something for pledging this much or that much. Right.
Right. If you pledge $10 at the Big Bad Gina Project, you get a super cool glow stick.
I love glow sticks.
If you go to the highest level of pledge, which is $2,500 or more, there's a whole package, I think, of signed goodies. And they say you can play percussion on the recording of the CD in the studio.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. The bands, by the way, will next play locally at Voulez-Vous Lounge in Eureka Springs on June 21st. Deadline to reach their monetary goal is June 15th. If you want to know more, you can just go into a search engine and put Big Bad Gina in Kickstarter.
Yep.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Wayne Bell, who covers pop culture for Ozarks at Large. Welcome back, Wayne.
Thank you for having me.
Although we have talked about earlier this year that the television season is much more fluid than it used to be, there are all these seasons, still, as you get into May, some of the biggest series are coming up with finales.
Yes, The Good Wife ended a few weeks ago. They were the first one that I really saw that was a full season that ended during this traditional period, but as we start to get through May now, we'll see more and more of the, especially the network comedies and dramas will end for the season. Things like Modern Family, The Office, which is ending.
Not just a season finale, but a series finale.
Yes, that ends next week with its series finale, which... For anyone who's watched The Office, the last couple years have been kind of...
Rudderless?
But there's something about these last few weeks that's just been, for people who have watched it all along, it's been kind of sad, and you kind of see where it's going. And
has it not seemed to you that the last couple of episodes could have been season or series finales?
Yes, and it seems like this last, I don't know, six episodes or something, they've really... brought in the tone and the climate of the first when it was so good.
Mm-hmm. In the past, often season finales meant cliffhangers. Of course, famously, Who Shot J.R.? But over the course of time, even something like Modern Family that had a pregnancy involved, Parks and Recreation this year, are cliffhangers still a big part of finales?
Yeah, I don't think that it's I really remember that now that you're saying it, because in the mid 90s, like with Friends, they did this big finale with this, you know, did they, didn't they, every year. And that seems to have gone away a little bit. Maybe that's because of the Mad Men's and the Breaking Bads and those kind of things. They don't tend to do that as much. In fact, they almost, I think it probably has to do with DVD and online sales, because they seem to be more contained. There's no lingering mystery, you know, or if it is, it's not to the level of Who Shot JR.
Right.
Because really, what show out there are people talking about all summer trying to figure it out? I mean, people watch what they watch now when they watch it. So it's not like it's a summer-long discussion where we anxiously await the reboot or the comeback.
And some shows that used to be summer considered summer filler are now moving in.
Well, that's the thing that really annoys me. It was
America's, you know, Got Talent starts
America's
in May now.
America's Got Talent, American Idol, Survivor, Dancing with the Stars. Those all started as summer shows, and I liked them because it was like, well, this is mindless summer entertainment. And then they started doing well, and they put them on all the time. So now The Voice is on twice a year. Dancing with the Stars is constantly on. American Idol's on every January through June. I mean, it's oversaturation, but that's part of it too, is the networks can do those things, and you know, it's so much cheaper, and then they depend on the Showtimes, the AMCs, the HBOs to do the FX to do the dramas and the comedies, and then they can start their season pretty much whenever they want to start it. Breaking Bad, for instance, will start in like July or late June or whatever for its, you know, final eight episodes. Years ago, that would be unheard of to start a show in the summer.
Finally, Iron Man came out this weekend, second biggest opening ever. It's already made $700 million worldwide. What did you think of it?
I didn't see it, but I know you did, and you liked it.
I liked it a lot, yes.
Even Gwyneth Paltrow?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very good.
Okay.
Well, after you've seen it, we'll talk about it. How's that?
Oh, well, in 2025 when I come back.
Wayne Bell covers pop culture for Ozarks at Large.
It was 99 cents. Copping it, washing it. About to go and get some compliments. Passing up on those moccasins. Someone else has been walking in by me and grungy f***ing men. I am stunting and flossing and saving my money. And I'm hella happy that's a bargain. I'ma take your grandpa style. I'ma take your grandpa style. No, for real. Ask your grandpa, can I have his hand-me-down?
Thank you.
Velour jumpsuit and some house slippers. Dookie brown leather jacket that I found. Dig it.
The first time I heard Macklemore's Thrift Shop on the radio, I thought it was a joke. Not that it was a bad song. In fact, it was quite clever. But rather that it was some sort of gimmick. I quickly recalled a link on a friend's Facebook page to the song's video, so I assumed it was the result of someone's creative boredom going viral on YouTube, or perhaps a new artist who had just created his first one-hit wonder. While tuning into Saturday Night Live sometime later, I saw Macklemore and Ryan Lewis perform Can't Hold Us, another single from the album, and realized there was something more than a one-hit wonder there.
Trust me, on my I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T, it's hustling, chasing dreams since I was 14, with the four-track busting, halfway across that city with the back, crush it, labels out here, now they can't tell me nothing, we give that to the people, spread it across the country, labels out here, now they can't tell me nothing, we give it to the people, spread it across the country.
Here we go back, this is the moment, tonight is the night.
Seattle-based rapper Macklemore, whose given name is Ben Haggerty, worked with producer Ryan Lewis to create the album titled The Heist. Macklemore released his first album, Language of My World, in 2005. According to the artist's website, after several subsequent years of artistic stagnation and frustration due to substance abuse, Macklemore made a commitment to sobriety with a newfound dedication to his music. This led to a partnership and ongoing collaboration with Ryan Lewis, who produced The Heist. Can't Hold Us is an excellent example of the layered sounds that make up several of the 15 tracks on the album. Throughout The Heist, you'll hear a wide range of instruments, including trumpet, violin, piano, drums, guitar, bass, and even some banjo. While you oftentimes hear several different instruments all at once, the musicians have managed to arrange them in such a way that it works. Instead of sounding like a disjointed cacophony, you have varied melodies that are each unique and interesting. That's not to say Macklemore doesn't understand the power of simplicity, which is evident in Same Love, where the first verse features mostly piano and Macklemore's lyrics.
When I was in the third grade, I thought that I was gay, 'cause I could draw, my uncle was, and I kept my room straight. I told my mom, tears rushing down my face, she's like, Ben, you've loved girls since before pre-K. Tripping.
Yeah, I guess she had a point, didn't she? Bunch of stereotypes all in my head. I remember doing the math, like, yeah, I'm good at Little League.
Same Love addresses same-sex marriage, and it's just one of the issues discussed on the album. While The Heist features some more lighthearted topics like the 24s on an off-black Cadillac in White Walls, The Heist also includes references to artist Keith Haring and author Malcolm Gladwell in 10,000 Hours, and the rapper's struggle with sobriety, which is highlighted in Starting Over. You know what pain looks like when you tell your dad you relapsed and look him directly into his face. The seat on your shoulders, deceivingly heavy weight. Haven't seen tears like this on my girl in a while. The trust that I once built and betrayed. But I'd rather live telling the truth and be judged for my mistakes than falsely held up, giving props, loved, and praised. I guess I gotta get this on the page. Feeling sick and helpless, lost the compass where soap is. I know what I gotta do, and I can't help it. One day at a time is what they tell us. Now I gotta find a way to tell them. Macklemore is skilled in his use of lyrics, but he's also not afraid of just letting the music do the talking like he does in Bomb Bomb. This entirely instrumental track features the Seattle-based trio The Teaching, one of many artists featured on the record. In fact, 11 of the album's 15 tracks feature collaborations with other musicians. While 15 songs can be a lot to listen to in one sitting, especially in our increasingly busy lives, should you be able to squeeze in a few tracks between this appointment and the next, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis's The Heist has an entire album full of music that will incite toe-tapping, heartstring pulling, or simply thinking more deeply about an issue, depending on which track you cue up. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And we drink and get older, as some of us even try to get sober. Now here's to the assholes and the last calls. We're city kids, you get what you asked for. And the acquaintances turn to friends. I hope those friends, they remember me. Hold the night for ransom as we kidnap the memories. Not sure there's a way to express what you meant to me. Sit around the table and use those years as the centerpiece.
Sounds of the city on Capitol.
What do you do when you're little and you know you can't be like your mother? I adore and am proud of my mother, but what she wants from me is blind adherence to the mystifying virtue of seemly behavior.
On the next Fresh Air, Patricia Volk talks about her new memoir, Shocked, about her relationship with her mother. And we'll hear an excerpt of a recent lecture by Martin Scorsese about film history. Join us.
Fresh Air tonight at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Performance today, next, after this evening edition of Ozarks at Large on KUAF. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The KUAF website giveaway is offering tickets to three of the area's largest concert festivals. You could win tickets to Rocklahoma, Wakarusa, or the country music festival Thunder on the Mountain during the month of May. Separate registration for each concert giveaway required. Details and registration available on the web at KUAF.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Dickey Junction.
And where is Dickey Junction?
It is southeast of Mount Judy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The Jones Center will use a just-awarded special grant from the Ozark affiliate of the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation to begin a program to expand news and information about breast health to the Latino community of Northwest Arkansas. Maria Susie Hannigan will serve as the project director for the Esperanza y Vida program. Mrs. Hannigan's field office will be located in the Jones Center. For more information on the Esperanza y Vida program, you can email mhannigan@uams.edu.
And big news last night for a University of Arkansas graduate business plan, a team called Pica Solar. based at the University of Arkansas. They have a patent-pending process to improve the efficiency of solar cells. Well, last night, just last night, they won the $150,000 MIT Clean Energy Prize.
Oh, wow.
That was a contest held in Boston last night. Also, the team won an additional $100,000 from the Department of Energy, so $250,000 invested in Pika Solar's technology.
That's so great.
Bringing their total that they've won this spring to more than $300,000 because they also won the $25,000 grand prize at the Donald W. Reynolds Cup in Little Rock last
Congratulations
month.
Congratulations to them.
How about that?
Very cool.
I didn't win $300,000 for energy efficiency, but I did go to Foam Fest this weekend.
I know. I saw you there.
Yes. It was colder than expected.
It was, but it wasn't as cold as I thought it was going to be.
And it was a good crowd.
It was a really good crowd. It was wall-to-wall people. I saw a lot of people I knew. I feel like everybody came out with a good attitude, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of bundled up. I mean, it took some of us some time to find the winter clothes that we had just packed away for the season.
Right.
But dressing appropriately definitely helped. And it was really fun getting to try a lot of different beers because that's the thing is, like, I don't really know what I like. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to go to a bar and order an entire beer, something you might not like. So this was fantastic, especially for me where I'm trying to decide what I think I would like. I really enjoyed this one. I don't know if I told you about it. It was a black walnut wheat beer from a place in Missouri. The name escapes me right now. But they were also the ones that had a honey and basil, which was interesting.
I did not have that one.
It was interesting. I don't know that I would want a whole glass, but it was interesting to taste. Sure. But I really enjoyed the black walnut wheat.
It was a fundraiser for Feed Fayetteville. I think they did pretty well.
I think they did really well.
And it was well done.
Mm-hmm. So that was the second one, I think, that they've done. So that's congratulations to them. And I'm glad that the fundraiser went well. And I think it was a good time by all.
You, the night before, didn't you go to the Norman Rockwell
Of
event at Crystal Bridges?
I did. I went to the, I was on the Bentonville Square first. They had the 5K Gold Rush. I think it's a fundraiser for the Bentonville School District Foundations and all that good stuff. Had some friends' nieces running in that, cheered them on. And then we had dinner and went over to the Crystal Bridges for the Rockin' Rockwell party. It was fun. People were dressed up in 50s attire or similar to people in the Rockwell paintings. So that was a lot of fun. They had some dancing, which kind of missed out on that just by the time we got there and all that good stuff. But they had a soda fountain, so that was a lot of fun. And you got to walk through the gallery at night, which is always a lot of fun, getting to go in there in the evening.
And by the way, the Rockwell exhibit's about to go away. If you haven't gone,
the 27th of May, I believe, is the last day.
If you haven't gone and you do go, which I just went.
I recommend you going. Yes, and you just
went
last
Thursday afternoon. Get the audio tour.
Yes.
It's free with your entrance into the Rockwell exhibit. And follow it all the way through because how Norman Rockwell ends, you hear a clip from him ending, and he kind of strips the veneer off some of the nostalgia that he painted early in his career. It's really interesting. I would suggest getting
that. I
didn't
get to hear that part. Yeah. Well, I do, if you have the opportunity to go during the week, would suggest going during the week because I was at Crystal Bridges, I guess, two Saturdays ago, and the line was all the way down the hall, wrapped around the lobby. There were so many people, and which is great because I'm glad everybody wants to go see it. But if you prefer a less crowded experience, I would recommend trying to go sometime during the week. You went during a Thursday evening?
Thursday afternoon.
Afternoon.
Yes. And the Saturday hours have been extended for the exhibit by a couple of hours.
Oh, they
go
have.
To Crystal Bridges Museum website to find out more.
Very cool.
You went to a bit of trail mix, which had been condensed inside.
Yes.
Saturday.
I caught the later installment of it.
The 3 to 5.
The 3 to 5. I caught more like the 4 o'clock hour before going to Foam Fest. And at that point, Three Penny Acre had gone into the art gallery and
at Walnut Center.
At the Walnut Center. And then Jamie Stone's group joined them and Carter Sampson joined them for a little bit. And so it was kind of just a jam session really for a little bit. And that was fun.
We're going to have Carter Sampson on the show in a couple of weeks.
We are.
Efren White is coming in tonight to sit with me to play some music. You'll hear that Friday on
you
Ozarks
will.
At Large.
You will. So lots of good things. And also, I think you're going to get to chat with Gregory Alan Isakoff.
This afternoon, you'll hear part of that. We have a brief conversation. You'll hear part of that tomorrow on Ozarks.
And that's because he is performing tonight as part of Artisphere at the Mildred B.
Cooper Chapel.
Cooper Chapel, Memorial Chapel in Bella Vista. There's that small concert, chamber series, is that what they're calling it? And I know that sold out, but he's performing tomorrow night at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. So a bigger show, more opportunity for tickets. And then, of course, Lizzie Lehman, who you heard on Friday's show, will be opening
yesterday's
for
him. Yesterday's show.
Yesterday. She was in Friday. She was on yesterday's show. You can tell I've slept since then. And she'll be opening tomorrow.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks for listening.